I resentment. Please give a warm welcome to Valerie R. from LA Pine, Oregon.
Hi there, everybody. My name's Valerie, and I am an alcoholic. And I live in La Pine, which is in the Deschutes National Forest in the center of Oregon. And I moved here by choice 20 years ago when I was fed up with people. little did I know that it was going to be part of my entrance into this program of recovery. And I have to say at the outset that I am so grateful for this online platform that we share, because I many of you who I know and love dearly, I met on this platform, and my life has been changed. After the lockdown, it rocketed for this alcoholic. I have some physical issues that prevent me from driving to the 7 a.m. meeting that was an hour away from my home, that was my home group, that I did for several years, drive in the dark, through the snow, over the pass. And I was there a half hour early to greet people. And I was there after, you know, and driving to and from that meeting, I listened to speaker recordings. And my car became my church. It had been my safe place, but then I brought alcohol into it eventually. I'm going to get to that. I'm going to talk to you really briefly to qualify. And I'm going to tell you some things that are a bit outside this program. But let me start by telling you, I am sponsored. I have a sponsor. I have a sobriety family that I am part of. We study the big book together. We take steps together. We do the work, and I have the privilege of working with others who work with others, and it is a blessing to see this thing in action and for me to just be a small part of it. I am really nervous talking in front of groups of people. I know I appear calm, but I am not. I am better one-on-one, so I'm terrified. Y'all have some giants who, for me, who have come and spoken this in this particular meeting, and I am very thankful to have been invited by Sherry. Thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you, Sunny, for reminding me. So I'm just going to tell you really briefly. I come from a very, very difficult childhood, and part of the reason why I share this way is that when I took the third step prayer, my life was not any longer my own. And I get to bring my experience and serve a purpose that is beyond me. I get to participate in this life in a different way than I was ever able to do. I'm 68 years old. I have been sober a little over 8 years. My sobriety date is November 28th, 2015. And since I took that, my third step, you know, my life has changed dramatically. But one of the things I have learned is that when someone asks me to share, it's usually none of my business why I've been asked to share. I just know that God has somebody there that needs to hear my story, that needs to hear my experience. And so there's nothing to compare to anyone else. So I'm going to tell you, I came from a very difficult upbringing. I did not come from a loving home. On the outside, we looked like the typical middle-class family. My father was an aerospace engineer, and my mother had severe mental illness. So I had no mother. There was a lot of violence in my home, but we had to look good on the outside. I knew hunger. I was not taken care of properly. And I had to survive that childhood. So the things that allowed me to survive that childhood were necessary, but did not work for me in my adulthood. And that's part of why I get to share about this particular step, why I have made this choice. Because what I did is I had these old ideas. I had the idea that I was responsible for everything, that I wasn't good enough. I was born a girl. My father wanted a boy. All bets were off after that. I could never do anything right, even though I was an A student, even though I was driven, highly driven. I did my best. And that worked really well in the real world. in a work situation, took advantage of my addiction to encouragement, to, you know, getting attention in a good way. But I wanted attention, but I didn't want attention. I am naturally, I've learned, an introvert, but I had to present as not an introvert. I learned to act. I gave you what I thought you wanted so that you wouldn't hurt me. I was an actress. I went in the world and I became whoever you wanted me to be with no idea who I really was. I was responsible for everyone. I was responsible for taking care of my mother and my siblings. I was the oldest of four. And nothing I did made a difference. But I had this old idea that if I were good enough, my mother would get well. If I were good enough, that stuff that was happening in the house would stop. If I were just good enough, thinking that I had power. So that was my number one old idea. And my second number two old idea was that no help was coming. That I believed in God. I could see the evidence of God in you and your family and you being taken care of, but I didn't think God even knew I existed. And so I had this idea that I had to go it on my own. And self-reliance was the shiniest tool in my toolkit, the hardest one for me to get rid of. So those were the two really driving old ideas that I had. There were more, but you know, these were things that I needed to survive my childhood. I got drunk for the first time when I was 14. I was at a party. I have no idea how I got there because I wasn't that girl. You know, I was the good girl. I had to be good. I tried my best to be good so that I wouldn't get in trouble, but I always got in trouble. So I knew that punishment was coming for me. And I learned to manipulate that. And what do I mean? When my mother was being hurt at a certain point in time, you know, I used to sit in my bedroom at night. I was the girl who read books under the covers at night. I lived in libraries. I lived for school. I was safer outside the house than inside the house. But what I learned to do was to put my body in harm's way to protect my mother, to raise my voice, you know, to draw my father's fire. You know, I thought that was my job. I thought that was my purpose, to save people, to rescue people, to fix people. Did a lot of that. I did a lot of trying that. But I got drunk for the first time when I was 14 at a party. I had no idea that there was alcohol in drinks that were being passed around, but suddenly I felt part of the room. That's the thing I noticed. I felt equal with the people in the room, and that was different to me. Now, I went home and I was terrified of my father because if he found out I'd been drinking, you know, I was dead. And my mother, God bless her, in one of her, you know, moments of clarity, she had a few, she put me in the shower to protect me from him and got me off and running. And I decided I was going to put that away and I was never going to do that again. And I went off and on my way, and I went to church and I did all kinds of things. I worked, I did whatever I could to try to fix my life, to try to fix me and how I felt on the inside. I did not know I was alcoholic until much later. I'm going to just, you know, let you know that these ideas about myself, these ideas about other people and myself were wrong. I did not have a clear idea of who I was. I didn't have a center, but I could see that there was a power out there. I just didn't know if it was for me. There was a glass between you and me. There was a glass between me and God. I couldn't get it. And so I just kind of went off and made my own way. Now, what I'm going to tell you is that I have stories that there's a story in my experience in every story. It correlates with more about alcoholism. I am the man of 30. I got drunk again when I had my first, when I had my son, my who was a miracle. And I came to, I don't even know how I got that alcohol. And I had a really high tolerance for alcohol. So I didn't get drunk easily, But someday I got drunk and I come to, and there's a toddler in my, the second story apartment that I'm in is a single mother, and it's a mess. It's a disaster. He had a great time wrecking it. And I came to and I went, oh my God, I could have hurt my son. And I put that alcohol away for almost 30 years, not knowing I was an alcoholic, running on self-will, running on self-reliance. During that time, I met and married my husband. We have been together for 43 years. We've been married for 40 years. And he's the one I hurt the most in this, because he thought he knew who I was. He thought he had this good person who was, you know, a choir director, you know, at church, and a Sunday school teacher, and all of that. But, you know, and I won't tell you what I did in my first marriage, you know, but I lived a double life. I was so compartmentalized that I lived under a delusion that I believed. I lied to myself and I believed my own lies, and I couldn't tell you the truth. I couldn't tell you the truth about me. I didn't know who I was. So I'm going to jump up, because I want to get into resentments, because this, the reason I picked this, and four and five together, and I didn't start my timer, and let me remedy that. I'm so nervous, guys.
I'll give you a 5-minute warning.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Sunny. I chose this intentionally because this resentment inventory was the hardest thing for me to do, but it was the thing that saved me. It was the tool that still saves me today, because it helps me to see the truth about myself as I'm able to see it. Before I came to you, when I was in that dry period, you know, things happened. I had PTSD. I was diagnosed with PTSD when I was 35 years old, and went into therapy and went into treatment. And, you know, and I had a couple of major depressions. And it's because my father died suddenly when I was 35, and it was safe. Got my mother safe, got everybody safe, and it was safe for me to fall apart. That was another way I operated. I got everybody together. I could get it through, but I would fall apart. And what would happen is I would go to therapy and I couldn't tell them what was going on because I didn't know. I couldn't see the truth about myself. I had lied to myself so well that I was blocked off. And I'll tell you, years of hypnosis, years of therapy have not touched. There are parts of my childhood I just absolutely don't remember. And I've come to accept that's God's way of protecting me. But what I do remember is bad. And so I spent a lot of my years waiting around, trying to be good enough, waiting for the people who I thought wronged me to come and fix it, to come and make it right. And I still did that after my father died, still expecting my dad to come fix it. How crazy is that? But I couldn't tell therapists the truth. I could only see what I was able to see in that moment. And that's just the nature of human experience. But what happened was later on, life just kept getting lifey, and I had no tools to live. And so a point came where alcohol became my solution. I got reintroduced to alcohol. When the kids were grown, when I was retired, when I tried everything that I thought was going to make me happy, whether it was building this house I'm in, you know, gardening, you know, any hobby that you could imagine, you know, trying different jobs, trying different occupation, going back to school, going to school because I didn't have a degree and I thought I was useless because I didn't have a degree, all these good ideas, you know, things I put in my life. I'll be happy if I have that car. I'll be happy if I have this house. I'll be happy if I lose 10 pounds. I'll be happy if I eat well. You know, all these things I thought I could do. And what happened to me is that life got so hard. It just got really hard because I was a caretaker. I took care of my mother her entire life and she died. And I took care of my in-laws who came up here to live with us. They both had Alzheimer's with dementia. And the third year of taking care of my mother-in-law, I picked up whiskey because I wanted to sleep. I couldn't sleep. And I thought, my great idea, whiskey will help. And before I knew it, I was drinking to blackout every night. And I thought I was sleeping, but I wasn't. I was still interacting with my husband. I was becoming another person that I had no idea of. And so for me, you know, the big book talks about that, you know, things happen quickly for women. You know, there's only a couple of books and stories in the back of the book that I have some, you know, ability to relate to. And one is about the banker, you know, who was together until he retired, you know, and there's a couple of places in the big book that it's like, oh yeah, I fit. That's me. So basically what happened was I was drinking around the clock. I was driving because I was, you know, I'd been able to maintain that skill. I thought that that was my superpower. Driving while intoxicated. I, you know, live an hour away from the nearest town. You know, so I was putting people's lives in jeopardy every day, drinking behind the wheel, drinking at home, around the clock, hiding it everywhere. I'm telling you because I'm one of you. I want to let you know that it was really hard for me when I came to you. I came because of a DUI. I got caught finally. I hadn't had any consequences of my drinking, and I needed that consequence to get my attention. And I was as mad as I was about that today. I can tell you it's the grace of God, that DUI. And I'm so grateful for the judge that sentenced me. And I can tell you that because of this program, I've been able to go back to the judge that sentenced me and say, I'm still sober and I want to thank you. You know, I have been transformed. From the person that I was, or the person that I had never become, to what is here today, to someone who really cares about others, who can live life and appreciate what I have. And I had those things the whole time, but I was miserable because I was focusing on what I didn't have. And my life was full of resentment. I had no idea how angry I had been because I learned to suppress that anger. I did not want to be like my father. So I would rather hurt myself than hurt another person. I was not violent, but what I did was I withdrew from you. You know, if you hurt me, I, you know, put some distance there and it would happen quickly. I could ghost you in a heartbeat. You know, so I really didn't have friends. And, you know, I didn't know how to connect with another person, how I managed to stay married to this wonderful man who is not one of us. Is a miracle. He's a gift to me. But I'm going to start to talk to you about the fourth and fifth step, which changed my life. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it took a long time for me to even realize that I belonged here. And for me, I had to get into service right away because I had to have a reason to be in the room. I had to feel like I was contributing somehow. And so, you know, I was making coffee. I was doing all kinds of stuff. I had to take that part of the triangle first. I was elected GSR, you know, like probably a couple months sober, and I got into service, general service, and it saved my life because it kept me in the rooms long enough. It kept me in the rooms long enough to hear the message of recovery. It kept me here long enough so that God could do the work that needed to be done. And I am convinced that the steps for me were just a way to keep me occupied so that God could come in and do the real work. The part I do is very, very small. But when I came to the fourth step, it was like hitting a wall. I had a sponsor at the time, and she is the most loving person, and I'm so, so grateful for her. She probably did not know how to approach me because I was so sensitive. And she said to me, go and find a worksheet and do your step four. No other guidance. You know, and it's like that set me off on a quest. You know, my perfectionistic mind, it's like, oh, I got to find the right one. I got to do it the right way. And it took months for me to figure out what my methodology was going to be. I could not write unless I had the right notebook, unless I had the right pen, unless I had quiet space in my house with nobody there. I mean, I had all these requirements. So I'm telling you, I'm telling on myself because this is why it took me 14 months to do my four step. That is how strong my resistance was. The first time I heard anything that resonated with me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous was the first line of the 10th step promises, and we have ceased fighting anything and anyone, even alcohol. I had no idea that I was fighting everything, that my resistance was something that I needed to pay attention to. Nothing wrong with having resistance. It's telling me something, right? So by the grace of God, I managed to come together with a time and a methodology, and I managed to sit down and do it. And how I started, because I couldn't focus on my fourth step because it was so hard for me to see myself, was that I had to sit down and write my prayers out every morning. I couldn't say them because I had been in church. I had to learn a different way, and I couldn't think straight. So I had to write my prayers out because it slowed me down just long enough to be able to go forward and take a different action. And what I'm going to tell you is that I didn't want to do my fourth step. I didn't want to take a look at myself, but this is a program of taking actions contrary to what I think and what I want to do. Everything that has been good for me has been me taking an action that is against my own will. In the third step, I gave my will to God. I gave my life to God. It's the only thing I have to give. And I'm so grateful that I was finally able to do that, and that I was finally able to lean into this program. But it took time. And I had to stop judging myself. I had to stop judging how I was doing it. You know, so I made myself a promise that I wasn't going to rewrite what I had written, that I wasn't going to clean it up, that I was going to do something different this time. And when I finally found the columns, which they're so simple now, but it was so, so hard. The who and the what were easy. I could tell you who hurt me. I could tell you what they did. I had this narrative that was running through my head. So the first and second column were easy, easy peasy. In fact, it was probably every person I ever knew. Because for me, resentment is anything from a mild irritation to rage. If something bugs me, if I feel resistance, that's the start of a resentment. It's either going to be against you or it's going to be against me. My biggest resentments are against myself, by the way, because of the time I wasted in my life, you know. But here I am. My broken pieces have been put together in a way that only I can express the experience that I have gone through. And this step was a deal breaker for me. But it was so hard. But so I get to the third column and I get to say, well, what part of myself did this affect? I get to start to make a turn. You know, it affects my self-esteem because I don't think I'm worthwhile if you hurt me. I mean, you know, I'm so upset about things that have been done wrong to me. That's what a resentment is. Only for an alcoholic, I play that resentment over and over again because I'm looking for a different outcome to something that happened in the past. I'm trying to make it right, and there's no making it right. So I get to look and see how did this affect my self-esteem, what I think of myself. What is my value as a result of this? Am I handing over my value to what someone else did to me? Am I giving up? Am I giving that up? And then how does it affect my pride? And that is what I think other people think of me. So my pride's a little bit involved right now because I'm worried what you're thinking about me right this second. So it affects my ambitions. How does it affect my ambitions? It's just my plans. You know, how I think you should behave, because I thought I knew. This is the fundamental problem, is that I think that I don't realize that I'm playing God, because I think I'm the judge and jury, that I get to decide how this world is supposed to be, how you're supposed to treat me, how somebody else is supposed to treat somebody else, not something that's within my power. But I don't know that. So, but if I'm telling the truth, I can tell you, this is affecting my plans, what I think you should do. And how does this affect my security? And this is my emotional, you know, what I need you know, what I think I need, the statement I need, that's my security. How does this affect my personal relations? And that's any relationship that is, that it does not include sex, but it really is, you know, how do I think that person should behave to me and me to them? How is my personal relations affected? Because I'll take what my father did to me and I'll apply that to every man I ever meet. Or I'll apply that to every, you know, how my mother treated me or my sister treated me, to every woman I'll ever meet, you know, because I'm looking for you to hurt me in the way that I've been hurt. And I'm trying to make it different. And I'm looking to people to fix what was not their responsibility. They didn't break it in the first place. So sex relations, a little bit different. It's the same. Thank you. It's the same. But, you know, it's any kind of intimate relationship, whether sex has been involved or not. So real or imagined, you know, if I think I had a relationship with you that was going down that way, then that's how that affected me. And then my pocketbook, you know, how was my money affected? And that's a difficult one to talk about. But, you know, a lot of times, like in my case, you know, I didn't go for promotions that, you know, I might have made more money, but I was afraid of what people would do. And I need to think differently. This, we're going to turn a corner here. So at this point, and I want to tell you, this is the huge point. I was willing to go that far and I went down the entire list and see, I had to go back and reconstruct everybody I knew who I could remember. I had a long list because I'd lived a long life and I had to do this perfectly, right? So I get done with this third column and a miracle happens to me. Without me even praying the sick man prayer, a shift took place, because this is the point where we're not telling the story about what y'all did to me. It's, what did I do? What did I contribute? You know, where is my thinking wrong? And what happened to me is that I was not able to forgive my father. I had not been able to forgive my father, and it had hurt me so much. But when I moved from the third to the fourth column, forgiveness happened without my even participation. It was a miracle. Suddenly I shifted and I was able to see, oh, maybe something else was going on with him that I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong in what I think happened. I'm right about some things, so I need to check that, but maybe I don't know everything. And maybe I'm not in a position to judge. So it's, where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? Dishonest is a really big one for me, and it's still tricky. Where was I self-seeking? Meaning, you know, what? How was I trying to get what I wanted? And where was I afraid? I was afraid of everything. But the baseline, the baseline that's really important is, where was I inconsiderate of that other person? Because guaranteed to me, guaranteed, if I don't know any of those other things, I know I was inconsiderate of that other person, because I lived my life by my own feelings. My centricity was that I only knew what I was feeling. I only knew my reaction, and my response to life was not healthy. All I knew was my pain and suffering, and I could not acknowledge even the presence of another person in the depths of that pain. So when I got here, I started to think, oh my gosh, what he had to put up with, coming home to a crazy wife after having to do things perfectly at work, after being responsible for the safety of lives in the space program, coming home to a house with crazy children and crazy wife, and what a mess. And no wonder he reacted that way, not having had the experience of ever being in a house that was like that before. He came from a very normal background. But I couldn't see that before. All I could see was how he hurt me. And what I realized is that I also hurt him because I withdrew from him, because I missed out on opportunities to be a good daughter to him, to listen to him, to have conversations with him, to understand what he might be going through. So that being inconsiderate where was I inconsiderate is a really important one for me. What am I not taking into consideration? What is going on that has nothing to do with me that is in this situation? And where was I wrong in my thinking? So the fifth step, and I really just have a moment. I do this every time. I really apologize, but I hope somebody's getting something out of this. The fifth step is really important because I've done all this writing, but I need another perspective to help seal the deal. And you know, I've never told the truth to anybody because I didn't know the truth. I didn't even tell the truth to myself. And I learned more truth when I was willing and able to read what I had written to another woman who didn't judge it, you know, who made it safe for me to tell the truth. Who created a space, by the way, that took 12 hours for me to read my fourth step. And she made two meals for me in the time that that took. And it was the most loving thing. And she just let me read what I had written. And she just made suggestions about, have you considered this? Where maybe I had left something out, you know, and where I was stuck trying to figure out what was wrong or what was my contribution to the party there. Because in every case, I took an action that, you know, like maybe I went back to an abusive behavior. Maybe I went back to an abusive person time after time after time thinking they were going to change. But the big deal for me was expecting something from someone who didn't have the capacity to give it to me. And that was the thing that I learned, was that I had been wrong. I had been wrong about a lot of things. I had been wrong about just even the idea that I was alone, that I could do it on my own, that I was responsible for other people, that I was some kind of superwoman. I was wrong in my thinking. And it was this fourth step and fifth step that did that for me. And what I will close with is that the fifth step is really important. And the promises started coming true for me during the process of the fourth step when I started to talk with my sponsor about, you know, I'm stuck here. You know, even before the fifth step got there, I started to get the benefits of it because I was willing to move forward a little bit more and lean into it a little bit more. The fifth step is where I felt connected to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Up till then, I wasn't sure that I was going to make it. But the fifth step and completing that fifth step sealed the deal for me. I could see where I was headed. I could see that I was going to make it. I got a little bit of a reprieve of feeling that I was going to make it. And what I had in this promise, in the four-step promise, is that I have digested, and you know, some huge chunks of truth about myself, and that I will be able to continue, therefore, because God has removed that out of my way so that I can grow up and move on and grow into the person that He wants me to be. So the fourth step is the way that I was able to be free of the prison of my own making. The fifth step carried me through that arch that the fourth step created. And I had knowledge of myself, some truth for the first time in my life. Some actionable truth, by the way, because it was things that affected me, things that I could do something about. A little bit, because all I had to do was keep giving my will to God and saying, I'm willing to come talk to y'all today, even though that's not comfortable for me. I'm willing, you know, to continue on. And I've had such blessings as a result. I am completely transformed today. I am not the person I came in here as. And I have been able to, like I said, be grateful for the things that I have instead of focusing on what I didn't get. And I've been able to participate in life in a way I didn't think possible. Even I have some frailties. I'm having some challenges with my vision right now, and it's a whole ordeal, but I am confident that God still can use me. I have my hearing. I can be with you. I can listen to another person. and I can encourage and be kind to another person. There are still things I can do until I'm in the ground, and even then I'm fertilizing the dirt. And so, you know, these are the things that I've learned in this program of recovery. And so I hope that what I said today encouraged you to take step four. It is a powerful tool that continues to be useful. That is necessary, by the way, to continue so that I can do a 10th step, so that I can keep things clean in that channel between me and God. So thank you for inviting me. Thank you again for coming to support me, those of you who came. I love you all very much.
Thank you, Valerie.